Hello, I am the egg in your fridge, hanging out here next to the pickles and half a cucumber. I'm going to level with you. We're not going to make dinner history together, but you can. You can order pulled pork tacos with spicy nachos. Go for it.
The food you really want is just a tap away. Just eat. Find your flavour.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Off the Post. I'm Russ Cohen. We've got Anthony Mangione and Mike Augello. How are you guys doing?
Doing good, Russell. How are you?
Good evening. It's Friday night. We're gonna talk some hockey. There's a lot to talk about. I guess we're gonna start off with the Flyers, I think, at this point, because they are the most unhappy fan base on Twitter right now.
It's
palpable. The thing, what I've seen, and this is what I've seen happen in the last, little bit in this losing streak, there was a definite point where Dave Hextall turned this team into a defense-first team and sort of probably told the team, this is how we're going to ride it down the stretch. And to the point where players were talking about it, even Voracek, like, hey, yeah, the offense is nice, but... And now it has completely affected them. Like, they can't – even their power play. That power play the other night was the ugliest I've seen in a long time, with 2 minutes of 5-on-3, and they couldn't do anything.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was one of the – watching that power play the other night, 5 minutes, it was just watching it, and it was like – it was the hockey equivalent of watching election night, pretty much, is the only way I could describe it. It was that level of excruciation watching just them fumbling it, and it's just – you could see the gears running in their head, and they're not operating on – they're not reading, reacting. They're not moving quickly. The pucks, they're dumping in. They're fumbling on passes, and it just was – you could tell. You could see that – again, this whole sort of – it's a combination of so many different things that you can say certainly them playing things defensively. But again, 177 goals against pretty much tells the tale. While tactically it's probably the right move for this team to try to tighten things up defensively, if you go up against a team like Edmonton, like we saw last night, playing with speed and purpose, they're going to cave with Philly playing this way. They're going to completely cave them in. And Philly, again, is a very tentative road team. They have a record, and it's been a problem for the last several years, where they're a very tentative team on the road, and the record for the last three seasons or so has bared that out. And it's been and in this case, you can't really tag it just to the coach. You have to tag it also to the players as well. They just don't carry that same sort of – even at home, though, now that they're struggling with that, but especially on the road as well. It's just – it's been a rough ride for them. And now the Islanders, who they were, well in advance of for a good stretch of the season, they've now passed them in the standings. And Philly, if their pattern keeps going the way it's going, I mean, we're talking Lotteryville here very soon for this team.
Mike, what's your thoughts?
Well, and the Islanders have a couple games in hand on Philadelphia, which makes it even worse. I mean, the thing that you look at is the minus 26 goal differential. I think Hextall was probably looking at that, when he started to stress, got to be more sound defensive club. I mean, I could see that going back to that game that they played against the Leafs in Philadelphia a few weeks ago, where they were lucky to win 2-1 on a late goal in the third period. It was a shutdown game. It was not like wide open offensively. Let's go back to the 80s Oilers. This was like chess on ice, and it wasn't exactly entertaining. They won the game, but I don't think that fits, the mentality of that club. You've got Gostisbehere, you've got Giroux and Voracek. You should try to be playing more of an offensive game, but Hextall is not that kind of coach.
And, Mike, you would think that certainly, but again, if you watch the players, and this has been for a good stretch this season here where they have not particularly played confident, even before
right.
Haxtell made the decision to shift to a more defensive style. And it's interesting because I brought this up when I was on TSN Radio in Edmonton, that both Giroux was okay at the start of the season, but he's beginning to show a combination. I'm wondering whether or not he still has any sort of lingering effects from the surgery from the off season as well. It was a major surgery, and Gossesberg got the exact same surgery this off season. Played good on Team North America, but his skull has just not been anywhere near as good defensively this season. And again, at the end of the day, when you look at the Flyers roster in terms of what they have in place, there's certain, you know, you've got a core of guys there, and I pointed this out earlier. You've got a core of forwards there of a small group who you can count on in the scoring department, and Voracek, Simmons, who's obviously very streaky. You count on Giroux, but you take those guys away, and there's no compensation from the other lines for offensive push. Combination of that is also Haxtell, and I think Haxtell realizes that even when they were playing a bit more open hockey during the first half of the season, they would be giving up goal scoring opportunities by the bushels the other way, coming back the other way. And part of that again is just talent level on the remaining lines, and there's a real concern there with regards to at least the way this current roster is constructed, that if those small core group of guys are not going, then they're going to have problems. And you can't even count on Braden Shen. And certainly, even though you would look at Braden Shen's numbers and you go, hey, he's scoring 17, you know, he's got 17 goals this season, 13 of them are on the power play. He's a non-factor at 5-on-5 no matter where he's at.
Yeah.
That's a problem. He's got 4 game-winning goals, but that was like a stretch of three. I think he had 3 games or 4 games in a row there where he got a game-winning goal. They're the epitome of streaky, and when they are cold, they look awful. And this is where they're at right now.
Yeah, their best players aren't their best players. When we keep saying that on this road trip, Nick Cousins is their best player, we're not ripping Nick Cousins, but we're saying, boy, he's a complimentary guy. He shouldn't be. But, like, Claude Giroux is a minus 20 this year. Like, he's got 12 goals, 7 of them are 5-on-5. Like, this is a legitimate awful year for him. Last year, he was fine. People ripped him. I thought it was unnecessary. This year, he deserves it.
I mean, power play numbers for Giroux are what they are right now. He's got 23. He's got 42 points in the season, with over half of them now over half of his points are on the power play. He is another non-factor at 5-on-5. You cannot compete at 5-on-5. You've got very little chance of winning. You can look at Jake Voracek. He's got 19 power plays, but he's got 48 points on the season. At least, you know, at 5-on-5, Voracek can be a factor. But Shen is a power play guy only. He's not a centerman.
Yeah.
He was basically that. And that's the other thing for Philadelphia. That third line center position has been an absolute rotating door for them this year. It absolutely has.
It has.
Honestly, if they were in a good situation here offensively, they could probably, you know, in an ideal situation, if you had a second line center, Sean Couturier would be playing 3C, and this team would look a heck of a lot better. But it's a gaping hole right now at 2C right now with Couturier playing there with only 16 points in 42 games. Again, he was injured, but still, 16 points is not enough for your second line center to have at this point of the season if you're going to be competitive. That's just it's a huge problem for them.
Well,
yeah,
that
so we go
said, Anthony.
Go ahead, Mike.
Go. Let me just add one thing. That being said, Anthony, if they need a number two center, they have what it would take in terms of depth of organization and prospects to get in on a Matt Duchene type of deal, and that would make sense because you'd have Giroux, Duchene,
you know
number two.
But you know, Mike, what the asking price is going to be, and it's going to be for it's going to be obviously for Ivan Provorov. That's a non-starter for Philadelphia because it's so rare to find a number one defenseman. And that's another thing you take a look at with Philadelphia as well. When your 20-year-old defenseman is your top defenseman on your team, I mean, you want to talk about – you worry a little bit about Luke Shen-itis potentially being, you know, that's you do worry about that. You know, I think – I don't – certainly talent level-wise, I think – Provorov has got a talent level that allows him to be able to handle this role, but it also speaks to just how thin they are defensively in Philadelphia in terms of the talent level in their blue line when your 20-year-old defenseman is already your number one guy and playing in shutout. Now, again, bright side of that is he's getting a lot of really good experience going up against other teams' top top players, and that's only better for him in the future. But at least in the current term, when you were counting on a guy like Shane Gostisbehere to be able to take a good step forward in his second year, that's not there. Mark Streit obviously showing his age. It's just it's not a good blue line. And again, we're not saying anything that we don't know already going into the season, but now they're especially trying to compensate for those shortcomings.
Yeah, no question. All right, so we move to a happier, rosier Toronto Maple Leafs where I would imagine three-quarters of the fan base really wants them to make the playoffs, and then 25% of them don't want them to and want them to keep compiling picks like the Sixers. Mike, I'm not sure which area you fall in. I think you fall in the 25%, or you might be a little different, but give us an idea of how the fan base is sort of reacting to all this.
I mean, there's definitely euphoria about how the team has played and a genuine excitement after, you know, a few years of, you know, generally disappointment and shame because they were one of the worst organizations. And in the span of 2 years, you know, you know that they've compiled a good young group of prospects and a young core with Matthews, Marner, and Nylander. But there's a lot missing, and they're, you know, if they make the playoffs this year, they're not a serious contender to go more than a round. You know, it depends on who they would match up with. So, I mean, I'm sort of in the pool in that group of, you know, it'd be great for them to make the playoffs, but it would also be really great for them to get another top 10 pick, you know, make some deals at the deadline, and as we talked about on the Buzzcast this afternoon. You know, the Leafs are making the moves that they did just before the deadline last year to put them in the position to do some very interesting cap calisthenics. They shifted almost $14 million in salary of Lupul, Robida, and Nathan Horton to long-term injury. And I think they're the dead money depository for the NHL at the deadline. You know, there are teams out there that are looking to open cap space, and if they can do that for, say, you know, giving them a second-round pick or a top prospect, the Leafs are one of the few teams out there that can avail themselves of that opportunity to help these other teams out for a price. And I think Lou Lamoriello, like he did last year with the Brooks Light deal, with the deal with San Jose, even with the Phaneuf deal taking on salary, I think he's going to do that. I think that's the direction they're going to go.
Who fills in for Mitch Marner now while he's out?
Well, they're bringing Soshnikov back in the lineup. They're moving Josh Levo into a higher line. So they're just shifting things around.
Is Levo getting showcased, or do they legitimately think he's better than Leipzig? Because I just don't feel like Leipzig's getting a chance, and you would think this would be when he would get a chance.
Well, Leipzig is still not back from the concussion that happened a few weeks ago. So that's the killer.
Okay, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, but I mean, your point is well made because Leipzig is in that situation where he has to be protected for the expansion draft, and he, you know, if he's back, they may have to consider moving him because they may lose him to Las Vegas for nothing. I thought a week ago when Levo was getting an opportunity that it was a showcase, but now he's played so well and Babcock is sort of talking him up that, you know, maybe there's a chance that he's actually going to get a lengthy opportunity after being treated as the forward version of Frank Corrado for a while.
The forward version of Frank Corrado. All right, that's interesting.
Yeah. He was benched for half a season, for more than half a season. So yeah.
Yeah. So when we look at this Leafs team now, without Marner, to me it's going to be huge because he actually was leading rookie scorers in points, and now tomorrow they're going to play Ottawa. That's a toughie, man. That's one where. That's going to be real tough, but there's also – this is the one that's a special night, right? Or is that Saturday? Saturday, I think.
No.
Well, tomorrow's Saturday.
Tomorrow night. They're going to announce one or two new members of Legends Row, and, it'll be a pregame ceremony. I have a general idea who I think it might be. I won't go into that now, but, it'll be a special night.
No, I want to go into it. I want to go into it just because of the sense that – You tell them tell everybody who you think they are, and then I'll tell you my thought, and then I'll be interested in Anthony's thought too. Go ahead.
Okay. well, there's been 10 players selected for Legends Row so far, and if you looked at the top 100 of all time that the Leafs did in October, there are five players who are not on Legends Row that were in the top 15, and that was Doug Gilmour, Wendell Clark, Red Kelly, Charlie Conacher, and Frank Mahovlich. I think it's going to be Mahovlich, and it's going to be Kelly because they're in their 80s, and I think that they're going to give them opportunity before they pass on to be honored.
Yeah, and I think the other factor is these guys already made the NHL's top 100, and they didn't get anything from the Leafs. I think that sort of put a little pressure on them, don't you think?
Yeah, I think I definitely would put a little bit of pressure there because, you know, we had so much debate obviously over the top 100, and let's face it, when you do this kind of a list, they know going in how, you know, the debate is what fuels everything and gets everything started. So it allows the Leafs to sort of, it gives the Leafs the opportunity here to be able to honor these guys if they feel obviously that there was short shrift there.
All right. So now we switch to go ahead, Mike.
One quick thing. I think from the fan perspective, the guys that they want on there are Gilmour and Clark. I think eventually they will be on Legends Row. Originally it was only supposed to be 12 or 13, and I think it could go as much as 15. But every single one of them right now has been a Hockey Hall of Famer, and if Wendell Clark gets selected, he'd be the only one who's not in the Hall of Fame that does get honored on Legends Row.
Okay. One quick side note. I see there's an article by Ken Campbell talking about a 55-year-old Chinese billionaire who now wants to bring the NHL there. And his name is Mr. Zhu, or Joe. And here's the thing. I have a general skepticism for this because, hey, I think it's great that they want to do it. I also think that probably in the back of their minds, they think, well, in 10 years, you know, we could win this league. And I think it will take them decades to literally, if they were going to try and do it from scratch. Now, they'll probably just try and buy an NHL team, get them to move there, but I don't think that's going to happen. So, like, what's your guys' thoughts on that?
Mike, you take it first. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Well, all I can say is I don't think that the KHL franchise that's in China has been a raging success. So I'd be skeptical. I mean, I'm skeptical if we're ever going to see an NHL team outside of North America. I mean, there's been talk about a European team, you know, but now the KHL has moved into Finland and other countries in Western Europe and Eastern Europe. So I just can't. You know, I think the domain of Eastern Europe and Asia is going to be the KHL unless it folds, and I think, you know, North America or the NHL will, you know, have a game in China, have a game in Sweden, but I don't think they're going to try to move there. It would just be too logistically problematic.
I think we're a long ways off from that, Russ. While it's very interesting in this circumstance, again, the cautionary tale in Kunlun right now for the KHL with the Red Star is, to me, a very obvious, you know, they built this, you know, pretty new arena and everything, and there is, if you've seen, there's been virtually no crowd, there's been very little crowds in there. It was basically a waste of money. So that has to be a cautionary tale right now in watching over expansion. The NHL, again, if you want to bring them over for games, much like the NBA does, where they bring, you know, teams over for tours and things of that sort to see if, you know, if fans are interested, that you want to host those things, but these are things that have to be handled very, very slowly. I mean, considering the fact of how much debate we had over Las Vegas being a viable hockey market, being a market that's viable, and that's in the continental United States in the middle of the desert, an expansion, an overseas expansion, just seems like a 20-year down the road after other markets have been attempted before they get there.
So is this more or less we're going to trot him out in front of the media so when we go to the Olympics back with the NHL players in China, it's a sell because soon they're going to say they're not going to be going to the Olympics. Is this counterbalancing that? Is that probably the deal?
Basically, this is going to be a first intermission story for Ron McLean to do on the CBC Olympic coverage. That's basically what it's going to be. Oh, you know, we're going to have an NHL team come to China. Yeah, and pigs will fly someday.
I think what the league will probably try to do, not necessarily start with a team, but certainly they would probably encourage this businessman to make some investments within the league.
Right.
To start off with, versus having, again, sort of getting himself involved in as much as you can, instead of just dropping a team in there saying, hey, you know, we're interested potentially over the long term, but for right now we're more interested in, if you're interested in certainly investing, we can, as I said before, the opportunity to host some games potentially during preseason, things of that sort. That's, you know, something that I think can be broached. But in terms of dropping a team in there, it's just, it seems like about three or four carts in front of a single horse here.
All right. So just a quick other note, and then we'll get into like maybe a little Rangers Islanders. The quick little other note is the Claude Julien live practice. And I have to tell you, this just seems like a sell job to the fan base. Like, look, we got you this great coach. Watch practice.
Yeah.
Watch how different it's going to be.
When they
how
never
much better
normally
we're going
to do.
Be.
Now, my big question is, again, in Montreal, just to clarify here in Montreal, more often than not, practices are usually closed.
That's what I've heard.
In Montreal, usually.
Yeah.
That would. So, yeah. So then certainly it's definitely then. Then you got to make it consistent. Great, you have one time opportunity. Then make it more. I've never quite understood the whole cloak and dagger. As much as the Flyers like to play things as close to the vest as possible with things,
yeah,
they always have had their practices are virtually almost all the time open on off days and beforehand. And the fact that that teams don't do that there's some kind of cloak and dagger. It speaks a little bit too much of paranoia up there. So, yeah, it's like, yeah, we're throwing you guys a bone. At the end of things, these things don't matter. But I think you're going to try to ingratiate yourself to the fan base, it's interesting, and I think that's probably the extent of where I'll go with it. But I think it's something that closing it to the public never makes any sense to me. But again, it's Montreal, so they can do what they want up there because it's Montreal.
Well, ironically, the Leafs carried their practices for every home game on Leafs TV, their cable arm, and on their website. But that stopped this year. I mean, they even did it last year, but that was the team that was, you know, last place, and they were sort of begging for attention. But as soon as they get Auston Matthews, as soon as they're, you know, really the first real year of the Babcock era starts,
now the games matter.
Yeah, now the games matter. Now practices are not there.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing too. All right, so we switch to the Rangers, another fan base that's sort of torn because they had their 6-game winning streak. They got beat pretty good by the Islanders yesterday. I watched that game. The Rangers have not won in the Barclays Center. I don't think that's any great thing because that series has always gone up and down. And just like with a lot of other teams, you know, you get these hot streaks. But what it did show you Ranger-wise is that, yeah, they definitely still have issues that sort of get covered up by the coach just putting his best foot forward always at press conferences and never really talking about problems. Like, you'll never hear Alain Vigneault talk about Rangers problems. They don't have any problems. And look, they're going to make the playoffs, but they're going to have a problem getting to the second round, and getting out of the second round seems really hard right now. Now they'll probably make a deadline deal. But I mean, we're looking at, you know, a team that defensively is not what they used to be, but it's, you know, probably slightly above average. And also, a lot of guys have gone cold. Like Mika Zibanejad, he doesn't even have a power play goal this year. Kevin Hayes has one, and they've kept him on the power play. They have other guys they could put on the power play, but they don't. VC has slowed down, which is normal. I mean, we expect a college player to slow down. But all these things are hitting at the wrong time for them, it seems.
Yeah, it does seem to be. And again, it's just with the Metro being the perfect storm that it's been this year in terms of just it's just a hornet's nest when, you know, you're normally you look at a team that's got a plus 43 differential and you go,
where they're probably just ruling the roost throughout the entire conference, and they're only the third best team in the entire division in terms of goal differential. That's again an interesting thing. The other thing is also that's interesting about the Rangers is they certainly have a winning record at home. They've got 12 losses overall to 18 wins. So, again, home ice, I guess comparing it to some of the other teams in the division like Pittsburgh and Columbus and Washington who absolutely just feast off home ice, it's not quite as substantive as before. But, again, it's just from the very nature of this division, it's a buzzsaw. And trying to get out of the first round is going to be really difficult. And if you get just one little hiccup going into the playoffs and you can't get going, these teams are going to kill you.
There's no Atlanta Thrashers, Mike.
No. I'm optimistic for the Rangers because I think Lundqvist is going to be Lundqvist when they get to the postseason. And if they have a first round matchup that goes against, say, Montreal, it'll be
Montreal would have home ice though. It would be tough.
Yeah, I know that Lundqvist has struggled in Montreal, but Montreal right now, as they're currently constructed, and I'm waiting for the Julian effect to kick in and see what happens. But right now, they're a train wreck. I mean, there's a lot of questions about Price. There's a lot of questions about a number of things on the team. Are they going to make a big trade? I think the Rangers are a lot more solid right now. I mean, they're players like Zibanejad. I mean, he really hasn't played. Yeah, I mean, he hasn't played as well as he did before the injury. So.
Right.
And maybe it's going to take them a little while longer to get back, but I still think the Rangers, there's going to be some sort of move they're going to make. They're going to try to be inventive at the deadline, and maybe, I don't know if it's going to be Shattenkirk, but I still think there's going to be something that they try to do, and maybe that will make a difference.
Yeah, I still think they probably will go for a big name like Trouba or Shattenkirk and see if they can get it. But they may go fishing. They may come up empty. I mean, that's possible. The other interesting one is the Pittsburgh Penguins. They lost tonight in overtime to Columbus. They actually have one less win than Columbus, but in today's NHL, you know, math doesn't really matter. But the thing is, and when you look at it,
Betsy
they
DeVos
lost Ole Mata. Yeah.
Let's not go there. Come on.
Come on, Mike. It's a sore subject for me. You know my day job.
I know. Enjoy.
You look at it, though. Ole Mata is out for 6 weeks. Now Justin Schultz has a concussion. They are probably going to be shopping like everybody else in the world for a defenseman, and they still think they're the team to beat in the, you know, for the East, but they're coming back to the pack.
You referring to Columbus in this circumstance, Russ? I'm sorry.
No. Pittsburgh. Because of the injuries.
No question. There was that certainly a good long streak there. And again, within their last 10, but again, they're 6-4. And I mean, they got points out of some of those losses too, but they're another team as well that has had struggles. They've had struggles on the road. Of all the teams in the division, certainly that's in position, they have a noticeable difference in terms of playing at home versus playing on the road. And that's not going to play well come postseason time if that pattern continues. No question about that.
Well, Mike. I mean, when we talked about Mata and him being out for 6 weeks and how, you know, Jim Rutherford might play a little, cap chicanery here with putting him on LTIR.
And Schultz was concussed, right? You got that to the
And Schultz was concussed, so you don't know what's going on with that.
And
the thing is, you know that Chris Letang gets injured every time he breathes. So I mean, really, they're in a situation where I think they have to add a defenseman at the deadline, even if it's somebody who's a depth guy, because you just don't know what kind of player you're going to get back when Schultz comes back, or how effective Mata is going to be. But I mean, Crosby and Malkin and all the guys that they have, I mean, the window for them is the next year or two. They have to really go for it. So I think Rutherford's going to try to do that.
And for our last little subject, this is a really little one. We've probably got a minute to go. We might run a minute into overtime. And I'm going to start with you, one of your favorites, Ilya Bryzgalov. He is going to do some trade deadline analysis.
Mm.
Will you watch? Do you care?
it'll make for good clips, let's put it that way, in terms of watching Briz do his full routine. Might be tough to do, but again,
yeah. Ilya, do you think this is going to overextend it for him?
What's that?
Do you think this will overextend it for him, like the Briz magic will be gone because all of a sudden he'll be on a live camera shot?
It's one thing to do these quick Player Tribune clips here, and again, I guess they're going to give him the opportunity here to see if he could sort of add some more levity to trade deadline proceedings. And again, as we all know, trade deadline day has the potential to be a dud at times if teams get their deals. Was certainly done in advance of that, and we could be seeing that here soon. But then again, with the conferences and divisions being so darn tight, there may be some teams that may be a little hesitant to go big splash. So in that circumstance, if you think Briz can bring some entertainment factor and say something, some crazy, wacky, off-the-wall thing, I guess I'm good for it. It's just I certainly don't want to lose the analysis as well with too much chicanery, so to speak. But
I'm worried about the live TV shot just sort of sitting on him and him running out of Brizisms. I think that's going to happen. Mike, what do you think?
Well, as long as they have Stolies on tap at the Sportsnet studios, I think they'll be okay. But, we'll get enough insightful commentary from Doug McLean and Nick Kiprio, so I think we'll be okay.
All right, we're going to end the show there. I could tell it's not going to a good place. We appreciate everybody tuning in. My cats are ripping the place apart. That's it for Off the Post, and we'll catch everybody next time.
Take care, everybody.